Check out my new book, Coping Courageously, a heart-centered guide for navigating a loved one's illness without losing yourself. It's appropriate for you as a clinician, for your patients, and for anyone you know who has a seriously ill loved one or an aging parent. Check it out and tell a friend. Welcome to the Integrative Palliative Podcast, where we help physicians and other clinicians master the art of integrative symptom management so they can wholeheartedly care for themselves as they expertly care for their patients. Welcome. I'm Dr. Delia Caramonti. Today, I have a story for you. Now, if you've read my book, Coping Courageously, A Heart-Centered Guide for Navigating a Loved One's Illness Without Losing Yourself, this story will be familiar. If you haven't read the book, you might want to check it out. There are many, many stories in that book. But today, we're going to start with one. It happened while I was on a business trip, and I got a phone call from my husband. And he said, our daughter went to horseback riding and she fell off, but I think she's okay. And I said, oh my gosh, let me talk to her. So he put her on the phone and I said, Bunny, what happened? And she said, I don't know, Mama. I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? She said, I don't remember anything. Gulp, right? My chest clenched. Oh my gosh, it had just happened probably 45 minutes before and she didn't remember any of it. She didn't remember a bit before, she didn't remember the experience, and she didn't remember after. She said, I just kind of woke up sitting against the fence. And that started a hellish 3-year journey for our family that impacted everybody because my daughter had not only post-concussive syndrome that really impacted her ability to function, but she also had excruciating, she used to say, 12 out of 10 pain in her head and neck that lasted for month upon month upon month upon month. And the whole picture together really took away her ability to function as a 12-year-old girl. She couldn't go to school anymore. She couldn't read anymore. She had trouble understanding language. When she swallowed, food came out her nose. She couldn't stand light. Her personality changed. She had unbearable anxiety. She really, really, really struggled. And she suffered. So what I got from that experience, what I learned from that experience was, first of all, how hard it is to be with someone who's suffering, but also some wisdom, maybe, about how to be with somebody who is suffering, how to handle it when somebody is suffering. Because it is so hard for the person who's suffering, of course, but it is also so hard for the people who care about that person. If you're a clinician, you see plenty of people suffering. And even as a human being, you may have people in your family who are suffering or friends who are suffering. So I just wanted to talk about suffering today because I've given a couple talks about it recently and it just was on my mind. So here's what I think we should do when someone that we care about or someone that we're caring for, either as a clinician or as a loved one, here's what we should do when they are suffering. That helps both them, but also us. Okay, there are 6 things that we need to do when we are in the presence of another person who is suffering. The first one is we need to witness their suffering. And here's what that means. When someone is suffering, one of their great needs is to be seen. Because to suffer and not be acknowledged for suffering is really painful. And it makes people sometimes not escalate in that they're faking it, but try to bring your attention over and over again to how bad their suffering is because they want to be seen for how much they are suffering. Now, we might tend to look away because we don't want to see it. It's hard to watch somebody else suffering, whether it's someone that you care about or it's your patients. It's hard. And so our inclination is often to look away and say, well, okay, now, you know, let's do this other thing. Let's go for a walk, or now let's clean the kitchen, or, you know, let's talk about your medications now. We tend to shut down people's expression of their suffering because it is uncomfortable to be in the presence of someone suffering. But it doesn't have to be that uncomfortable. It's really that uncomfortable when we feel the urge to fix it. So I'm not saying that we need to fix their suffering. We'll talk more about that in a second. But first, we just need to witness it. Just, I see you. I see you, that you are suffering. Don't run away. Don't turn away. Don't shut down to it. Be in the presence of it because that helps the other person. Number 2, we need to validate the depth of it. And it's so tempting to do the opposite of that. to try to whitewash it. Oh, you know, it's going to be okay. And, you know, but at least you can still go to work or whatever. Don't do that. People need the depth of their suffering to be validated. And it doesn't mean that we're saying, oh, stay suffering that much, or we don't care, or we're not going to try to make it better. I think we have this kind of magical fear that if we acknowledge how badly someone is suffering, that then they'll be stuck there and then they'll suffer worse. But it's the opposite of that. People need to have their suffering validated, meaning, I see how terrible this is. I hate this for you. I hate that you have such terrible pain and the medicines aren't working. Even as a clinician, we can do that. I so wish this were different. We'll keep trying, but I so wish it were different right now. I see how hard this is for you. Just saying that, sometimes it makes people cry because they finally feel acknowledged. That is part of your healing presence, is to validate the depth of people's suffering. Don't turn away and don't try to whitewash it. See it and then validate it so they know that you get how bad it is. Number three is allow yourself, though, to set some boundaries. So yes, you should witness their suffering. Yes, you should validate how bad it is, but you don't have to sink down into the pit with them and stay there. Don't do that. So you get to set boundaries even if another person is suffering. And it's easier to do that when you've acknowledged for them how bad it is. But then you can say, I can only spend 2 hours with you on Saturday. Or as a clinician, we have about 3 minutes left and then we're going to close the visit. Is there anything else we should talk about before we close? And you can do that even if the person is still suffering, even if the person is upset. You can do it in an empathetic way, but you can still do it. You can set boundaries. And actually, you need to set boundaries. And particularly if you're either a caregiver or a clinician who is often in the presence of another person suffering, if you don't set boundaries, you'll get swallowed up. When we were caring for our daughter and she was really in a bad place, we asked a therapist, actually, what do we do when she's really angry and sending that anger our way? It's hard for us. And it helped a lot to get permission from this therapist that you can say, I see how much you're suffering, but it really hurts us when you scream like that. So if you scream at us, we're going to go into the other room, but we care about you, but we're going to go into the other room because it hurts us when you scream at us like that. So that's an example of how you can be present for someone, validate their suffering, and also set boundaries for yourself. And that counts too if, say, you're caring for a loved one and you want to go away for the weekend and they're safe, you have someone staying with them, but they don't want you to go, you can still go. Go away for the weekend. You need to set boundaries about how much you allow that suffering of the other person to come over into your land. So witness it, validate it, but then set boundaries for yourself so that you don't get sucked down into the pit yourself. Number four is you need to release responsibility for fixing it. And I even mean that for physicians and other clinicians. We can't fix all the things. Now, you can try. You can try. You can try your surgeries or procedures or medications or radiation. You can try to fix it, but it is not your responsibility to fix it because you may not be able to. And that's just a fact. Physicians and other clinicians cannot fix all the things. Family members cannot fix all the things. You can't make a very unhappy person happy. You can try, and that's a loving act as a family member or a clinician to try, but it is not your responsibility to fix it because that is impossible. It's impossible for you to say, I will definitely fix this. And so that may be a hard thing to process, that I can try to fix it, but it's not my responsibility. It's literally not your responsibility. It's your responsibility, potentially, particularly if you're a physician or a clinician, to try, but it doesn't mean you fail if it doesn't work because you're not actually able to fix all the things. It's just not how the universe works. So you have to find a space in your head where you understand that you're going to try to help, but it might not work because that's how the world works. And that is not your fault. And it doesn't mean you did anything wrong. And it doesn't mean you failed. You're going to try and hope that it works. You're going to witness their suffering, validate the heck out of it, set some boundaries for yourself, try to help, try to make it better. but release the responsibility that you absolutely must fix it because you don't have that power. Your thing that you do to try to fix it might work or it might not work. So you have to release the responsibility that you have to fix it because you don't have that much power. Number five is you really need to have some kind of ritual to release the yuck. If you're with somebody and you have some countertransference going on where, gosh, they remind you of your dad or they're the same age as your child, and you're feeling that suffering more than normal, or they're putting it on you. Maybe the patient is very angry at you and is spewing kind of hateful stuff your way because they are suffering and they're sharing it with you. You have to have some kind of ritual to release that yuck because otherwise it builds up in us, whether you're a clinician or a family caregiver, and it damages us. It wounds us. So I think I've told you guys this before, but I used to leave some exam rooms with patients and shake my arms like I'm shaking water off my arms. And my colleagues would say, oh, you must have had a really tough patient encounter. Dr. Caramonti's shaking. That means that she had something tough happen. But it's important to have some kind of ritual. So you can shake your hands and arms like I did. You can wipe off the yuck, like wipe your left arm with your right hand and then your right arm with your left hand. You can go wash your hands and sort of see the yuck going down the drain. You can throw water on your face and imagine washing it off. When you get home, you can take a shower and imagine washing off all the negativity away from you. You can blow it out with your breath. You can exercise so you're breathing even harder and blow it out even more. You can write in a journal and put all the yuck into the journal. You can do imagery in your own mind and imagine it floating off into the air. There's a million ways. There's no right way, but I really recommend that you pick a ritual that is specifically to release other people's suffering that has landed in you, because it will happen, particularly if you're a physician or clinician, it will happen. And if you don't get rid of it, it builds up and it wounds you. Okay, so have a ritual to release the yuck. And then number six is to have an active practice to fill up your own cup, which of course I've talked about a million times because it's the solution for a lot of things. But if you have a job as a physician or clinician, or you're a family caregiver, your cup is emptied on a regular basis just from your daily experiences. And so just a reminder, the two parts to that are look at what empties it and try to do less of that. Look at what fills it, try to do more of that. If you ever want guidance around how to do that, reach out to me and we can talk about how you can do that. But the basic idea is if your cup is empty, being in the presence of other people's suffering is so much harder. Part of managing the process of being in the presence of other people's suffering is actively filling up your own cup, not just holding on by your fingernails like they taught you in medical school, like, oh, yeah, I'm fine, I can do it, I'm still okay. Forget that. No, actively fill up your cup so that you can bring healing presence, so that you don't feel miserable and depleted, so that you get to enjoy your own time on this planet. It's really important. So the six things that we can do when someone that we care about, either as a clinician or as a family member or loved one, is suffering. Number one, witness their suffering. Number two, validate the depth of their suffering. No toxic positivity, no whitewashing. Number three, allow yourself to set boundaries. Number four, release the responsibility for fixing their suffering, even as you try to make it better. Release the responsibility for fixing it. Number five, have some kind of ritual to release that yuck that comes upon you when someone in your presence is suffering. And number six, actively fill up your cup. Let me know what works for you. Let me know if I missed anything. And please share this with someone else that you know who is in the presence of other people who are suffering, either as a clinician or family caregiver. Thanks so much for being here, you guys. Check out my book, Coping Courageously, A Heart-Centered Guide for Navigating a Loved One's Illness Without Losing Yourself. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. This podcast is brought to you by the Integrative Palliative Institute. Visit our website, integrativepalliative.com. There you can access physician and clinician training, well-being coaching, free downloads, and other cool stuff. And feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn and share your favorite episode with a friend.